There we go. Ben was able to get it to ring in earlier, but welcome. Welcome to church this morning. My name is Joy Heft. This is a home where no revealed truths are promoted and no scripture or human being is accepted as infallible. This is a place for searching for the truth. Here we accept one another and provide opportunities and encouragement towards spiritual growth. Here we give you the space to change, wonder, and explore. Here we encourage a free and responsible search for the truth and meaning. We believe in the commitment to those ideals which makes us caring and active in the search for truth and meaning. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular, those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at church. We are glad you are here and hope to see you again on future Sundays. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 4 years old through these doors and to the left in the first door after past the foyer. Our religious education program will be released later in the service as we sing them off to their classes. At the spirit chair, at the front, we have a spirit chair which includes activities for all ages. You are invited to go to the spirit chair at any time during the service and take an activity back to your seat. So children and youth are encouraged to attend the religious education programs when we sing and bless them out later in the service. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. We would also like to welcome our speaker today, Andy Grizzle. He has been a member of Emerson Chapel since 2007 and is one of 3 UU ministers in training at Eden Theological Seminary. He joined the Path to Fellowship after a brief heart-related death, from which he appears to have recovered. Andy has been a lab analyst, a truck driver, a director of quality, has owned a consulting company, and spent some years as a hired man for a farmer. A poet and a storyteller at heart, he has found a meaningful spiritual home among Unitarian Universalists. Andy and his wife, Melissa, live in St. Peter's, Missouri, with 2 children in college and 1 who is impatient to get there. And we're waiting for our computer to update, so we don't have anything up there. We may have to go old school for a little while until it finishes updating. So I have some announcements. From dawn on November 9th, the day after the presidential election, there will be a special evening vesper service of quiet healing. No matter the outcome of the election, people will need a place to be in community and process what we have been through. Mark your calendars for 6 p.m. on Wednesday, November 9th, here in the church. And we do ask you to turn off your cell phones or place them in airplane mode, as the signals sometimes cause problems with the sound system. And let's see. So from Dee Evans, I don't see Dee here yet. She says, there's a first aid kit on top of the mailboxes on the way to the minister's office. A sign is clearly designates where it is. If you use items, please let someone on the board know so that they can replace them. And this is also from Dee. Joy hath decided to get the plans of the blueprint of the church framed. She did so fully expecting to pay for it. Her boss at Picture This and More donated the framed glass and my time to our church. So she's going to write a thank you note to Picture This and More. And this is... And we'll probably maybe hang it in the place or something like that. So we can put that away somewhere. Okay, and if you've noticed in your pews, there are copies of the song that we sing to the children, and they have been, or they will be if they aren't, printed on cardstock. And so keep them with the hymnals so we can reuse them every week. Okay, and this is from Jennifer Lewis. Next week, October 30th, all children and youth are invited to wear their costumes to church for our youth Halloween party. The kids will also be trick-or-treating for UNICEF after the service, so bring lots of change for that. And now I'm going to ask Ron to step up. He has a few things to say. I might have to come.
Tomorrow is a very special day. Does anybody know why? United Nations Day. Tomorrow, the United Nations is 71 years old. And we here in this church are supporters of the UN office, which is located very close to the United Nations itself. On the pews, there are scattered through it, and I hope you can find it if you want. There's one brochure that tells you about the work of the UN office. There's another envelope to be sent in if you'd like to give your individual support to the United Nations office of the UN, of the UA. And also, I am looking for another person or two to be envoys. I have the position of being the envoy of this congregation to the UN office, but it doesn't have to be just one person. It can be a team, and I would like to have some assistance. So anyone who would like to also be an envoy for the UN office, please let me know about that. And I do hope all of you will take seriously our commitment to the global community, and this is the way that we can show it, by supporting our own UN office.
And my final announcement is from, it's also Ken's birthday tomorrow, besides United Nations Day. It's Ken's birthday. Okay, so my last announcement is from Peg Flack. It is indeed time for something better, for a delightful plan to seek relief from stress of our recent political scenario. Please join our community-wide weekend of something better on November 12th and 13th. Relax and enjoy plentiful workshops, a hearty dinner prepared for you and cleaned up with absolutely no effort on your part. A combined spoken word and live music concert featuring the troubadours of Divine Bliss, as well as insightful writers who will be sharing original stories of something better. Invite your friends via the Facebook page. Flyers are available in the worker room, and see Peg Flack for details. And as my prelude, I was going to place, you were going to see a video of the Troubadours of Bliss doing something better, but it's still updating, so we may not get to that. We're going to move on to our chalice lighting, and as I invite Ruth Maskell to light our chalice, we're going to say the unison words somehow. Are they in the other service? Okay. I forgot what was in here. We gather this hour, if people of faith, and joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning, in celebration of the life we share together.
Good morning. This 83%, in case you're wondering, but most likely what we're going to see today, and I don't usually like to start out with bad news, but we'll probably end up early today. This may be short, so that's all right. We all gather here by choice. We all gather here in love. Let us open our minds as wide as we can to everyone else that's here and everyone who isn't here, and let's open our hearts just that much wider. Please rise in body or spirit for hymn 318, We Would Be One. Now, 91%, I'd invite the children forward for the story for all ages. So I'm going to need all of the children. And if you're on the cusp, if you're asking yourself, am I a child or am I an of all ages, right? Just make it yes and come on down, because we're going to be making some tough decisions. That must be something else in there. So what I'm going to need for you guys to do for me, I'm not going to make eye contact or point, but there are some people out there young enough that they could really come up. So if that's you, no, Okay, just wanted to make sure. All right. What I need you guys to do is we're going to be in two groups here, okay? We're going to be in two groups. So can you four come over this way and kind of face toward the middle, and then you guys come over here and kind of face toward the middle this way. This is tricky. Can you? You can blow up balloons. All right. This is not just a balloon, but we'll figure that out in a moment, okay? So I want you to pay attention, right, while I'm blowing up the balloon, because there's going to be a quiz right after this. Ready? You think I'm joking? I'm not joking. There will be a quiz. Okay, one moment. You should do it. I do know. So
I don't know how to.
You don't know how to?
I don't know. She's only three years old. Let it go. Don't make it so big and pop.
Pay attention. This one is going to be one of the questions. Okay, so that was for you. That was for you. Okay. Now I gotta ask you, what's in the balloon?
Air.
Just air. What? Some helium, I'm sure, but probably trace amounts, right? Well, not trace. Air. Where'd that air come from? Whose lungs? My lungs. Where did I get that air from? Like before?
The air in the air.
The air in the air, right? And so what?
The whole wide world.
The air in the whole wide world. That, there's air underwater? That. Right, and do I have gills? How do you know? Ah. Oh, I'm not a fish. Okay, so what we have is a balloon full of air from air that I sucked in and then blew out again. So that means some of this air in this balloon, you guys already breathed out, right? You breathed it in, you breathed it out. I probably breathed some of that in, and now that's part of what's in the balloon, right? You think about it that way much, right? Okay. Now here's the tougher part. So what's the balloon over here? What was the consensus?
potentially a rabbit is the best guess. What do we got in the sunglasses? Bear? Fat bear? Bear's a cat?
Bat nose.
Okay.
Bat nose.
Alright, so here's the thing. Now, I want you guys to come over here and tell me what you think is on the side and down. So far we've got bear, cat, something. Alright, so when you guys are over here looking at it, what do you think we got? It's not so much gravity anymore, is it? Right? Okay, so. See, now you can't blame them, can you? That was a tough one.
The thing about this is that what I'm holding in my hand here is what? It's a balloon, and what's it full of? The air that we all share. Some of you have it in you. I had pretty much all of the air in here in me, but I didn't make it. It's just kind of all around. I picked it up, put it together, put it in a balloon, and it's a balloon with some kind of faces on it, right? When we talk to other people, anybody else, and we're talking about shared experience. Like, what are some experiences that you guys share with others? Torturous homework.
What? Really bad story problems.
Story problems, yeah.
So bad in my spelling.
Your spelling is bad, or having to do spelling is bad? Having to do it, okay. That is an important distinction. I appreciate that. Okay. Four story problems. So you had to do those problems. So did everybody else in your class, I imagine. Right? So what you guys go through is a shared experience that everyone goes through to some degree. How do you find that commonality if those, the way you look at it is torturous, or that spelling is too much, and maybe not the math so much, or other people have a different face that they put on a similar experience?
That's a happy one.
And the way that you build a community with those people and talk about your shared experience, you have to move around to the side that they're on and take a look at it from their side, right? All right, any questions for me? Anyone real quick before we sing you out? Because that's the end of the story. Thank you, guys. Yes?
I don't like Thriller.
You don't like Thriller? Okay.
You don't play the song? Or
would you like the balloon?
I'm just going
to... Is it okay for the balloon to be given away?
I'm just going to start.
All right.
Singing.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's now sing our children back to their classes, out to their classroom. And you have the words here. Go your way in peace. I'm going to have to start here. Did you get that open?
No.
It's doing something else.
It's
weird
installing.
Up here. Okay. So now a time for sharing of stewardship. Our spiritual lives are filled up. Our hearts are warmed by the giving of time, talents, love, comfort, and our many other human resources. We each receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does a financial contribution you make here reflect what you receive? How does our collective money transform those within and beyond our congregational walls? This morning's offering will be most sincerely and gratefully received. May it be lovingly given. No music. So please join in reciting the offering blessing, which is in your order of service. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings. Now please open your hymnals to reading number 645 and stay seated and join in the responsive reading called The Song of the Open Road by Walt Whitman. Afoot and lighthearted, I take to the open road. Healthy, free, the world before me.
Henceforth, I ask not good fortune. I myself am good fortune. Strong and content, I travel the open road.
I inhale great draughts of space. The east and the west are mine, and the north and south are mine.
All seems beautiful to me.
Whoever you are, come travel with me. However sweet these laid-up stores, however convenient this dwelling, we cannot remain here.
However sheltered this forest, and however calm these waters, we must not anchor here.
Together, the inducements shall be greater. We will sail pathless and wild seas.
We will
forward, and the great companions, and to belong to them, they too are the road.
Onward, to that which is endless, as it was beginningless, to undergo much, trance of days, rest of nights.
To see nothing anywhere but what you may reach it and pass it. To look up or down, no road, but it stretches and waits for you.
To know the universe itself as a road, as many roads, as roads for traveling souls.
This reading comes from Halaladin Rumi, A Sunrise Ruby. There we go. In the early morning hour, just before dawn, lover and beloved wake and take a drink of water. She asks, "Do you love me or yourself more? Really, tell the absolute truth." He says, "There's nothing left of me. I'm like a ruby held up to the sunrise. Is it still a stone or a world made of redness? It has no resistance to sunlight." This is how Halaj said, "I am God," and told the truth. The ruby and the sunrise are one. Be courageous and discipline yourself. Completely becoming hearing and ear, wear this sun ruby as an earring. Work. Keep digging your well. Don't think about getting off from work. Water is there somewhere. Submit to a daily practice. Your loyalty to that is a ring on the door. Keep knocking, and the joy inside will eventually open a window and look out to see who's there.
Each week, we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. You are invited to write joys and sorrows that you'd like to have read aloud in the book before the service over on the side over there. For things in our hearts that we hold in silence, we recognize them by taking a stone or stones from the bowl as we enter, or from the bowl here at the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our life through thought or meditation. We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community, which includes a little bit of water collected from our annual water communion. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrows. And now as Andy adds a few more stones to the bowl for the joys, sorrows, fears, and hopes for those who cannot be with us today. For those in our community, our nation, and around the world who are in need of healing, or who are in need of sharing a joyous moment, may we always be in one another's hearts. May we follow the principles we share so that we respect, comfort, and support all those in need, just as we ask each other to respect, comfort, and support us.
If you can all join me in a spirit of meditation, I'm going to start out with some words. We'll have a time of silence. I want you to imagine that there's a song you can hear it, and it started before we got here, before any of us got here. And that song keeps going long after we're gone. We've never laid our eyes on the score, and we rarely notice when the people around us are singing. But we hear it, and it is beautiful. All right. I would normally launch into a sermon without any sort of apologies, right? But I feel that one is necessary, and all of the, like, even the minor sort of AV glitches, I'm pretty sure are all my fault, because when I hopped out of the shower this morning, I started out putting on my son's underwear, okay, and he is not the size I am, so that I should have called ahead, really, and just let you guys know, you're joining me on one of those days. So saddle up. Okay, that being said, I didn't leave him on, and we'll just leave it at that. A few weeks ago, I was asked to describe my personal theology. Apparently it's a thing they do in seminary, right? So they wanted to hear what my idea of God was. So I said that I had a sense of something that's larger than all of us, that's a unifying energy, something beyond our understanding, that connected us in ways that we're able to experience ourselves from time to time, if we are attentive. So the reply I got to my answer was, so you just haven't figured out the rest of it then? Okay, I thought I'd really nailed that down, right? I had nailed it. But for this person, my answer sounded like the theology of a child. Unformed, unsophisticated, I came across like a believer. But I am a believer. But it's important to make a distinction at this point. I am not a believer. Okay? I'm not a believer. I'm a believer. And it's funny to say that, but the odd thing is that in a lot of my conversations with UUs, the reaction from many of the people would be about the same. If I were to say that I was a believer or that I was a believer, the gut response that I get back from people is along the lines of, well, surely not. He seems too smart for that. And I have to say, I'm hesitant to disagree with that, okay? I like to be smart. But the truth is that my answer to the question of personal theology was as well stated as I could make it. As Unitarian Universalists, we are forced to answer this question without a handbook. There's no dogma to memorize that makes the answer to this question easy. We can't answer on behalf of anyone else, even in our own congregation. Every one of us has to dig deep and answer for ourselves. Until I was asked to answer directly about, you know, to name my personal theology, I always answered in relation to other belief systems, right? So in discussion about the Trinity or the Triune God or any of that, I would say that Unitarians haven't believed in the divinity of Jesus for hundreds of years, and Unitarian Universalists don't require belief in God. In a discussion about salvation, sin and salvation, I would point out that UUs don't believe in heaven, and that we don't really then have a need for salvation. Whatever evil's in the world is carried around by the acts of people, right? So we don't really need salvation. In discussion about sacraments, I point out that UUs didn't keep any of the seven original Christian sacraments, but that we celebrate life events with community rituals. So I felt that helps us define kind of where we stand. But when I find myself in discussions about the meaning of sacraments and rituals and other faiths, I find myself mostly with my foot in my mouth. And in fact, I spend so much time in that condition, just especially over the last few months, that my toes are like little raisins, right? Late in a long discussion of an even longer document full of arguments for and against creating an ecumenical communion service, I could no longer see the point. It was far too much tedious talk about who could bless, who could serve, who could partake in the rite of communion, and what the rite was supposed to mean to each person who took it. And it went on for a long time. So I asked to the class, what does communion mean to you guys personally? Like, what do you experience in taking communion at your own church that makes it worth this much discussion about what happens at other churches? The first answers I got back were highly technical and very dogmatic, going as far as to explain the episcopal succession of authority, and let me get this right, in the substitutionary atonement theology, right? So to me, I was feeling like my question about personal experience hadn't been answered, right? Because I'm a word nerd. I don't think I'd use the word substitutionary in describing my own experience. So I followed up and asked, I said, okay, I understand the intellectual and logistical sides of this, but I want to know what they experienced, not what they learned. That it turns out, was a step way too far, and they took me to task. So what followed was a scene where I, very imperfectly, practiced patience and listening skills. It was very imperfect. But I practiced being patient and silent while student after student told me how rude and dismissive I had been of their faith. See, it may be easy to answer our difficult questions by pointing comparisons to the dogma of others, but what they heard, and this is what I learned from that rather comprehensive feedback, was that what they hear is a series of statements that deny the basis of their religion one point after another. What they heard me say is, no, there is no salvation. The only value to sacraments is social. Jesus is not God. It's the theological equivalent of saying, wrong. Wrong. That's what I was doing to them. Knowing this, I can understand why so many of them revealed their experiences with not just me, but with other UUs as being dismissive or outright rude, they felt, to people of other faith traditions. So I get that now. It took a long time in this discussion to come to the understanding that I did not have an intimate experience with communion, and I wanted to hear one. The first person who spoke up against my behavior ended up sharing a deeply heartfelt and beautiful story about their first communion and their experience of near physical transformation from the feeling of from the buildup to the event that just kind of changed how they viewed their religion entirely. It was a beautiful story. But not only did they share that life-changing moment, they admitted that they didn't share it earlier when I had asked because they were embarrassed to tell a story of real, direct, sacred experience in front of their fellow Christian classmates. They, too, were afraid of being seen as childish. They were afraid of being seen as credulous. So what they expressed in that experience of communion was a direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. That's one of the UU six sources of wisdom. It's one of my favorites. There's a philosophy that Mary Chase introduced in a play in 1944 that exemplifies this same source of wisdom, the direct experience, from another point of view. It could be called Taoism, or maybe just the way of the invisible rabbit. Here's the quote. Harvey and I sit in the bars, have a drink or two, play the jukebox. And soon, the faces of all the other people, they turn toward mine, and they smile. And they're saying, "We don't know your name, mister, but you're a very nice fellow." Harvey and I warm ourselves in all these golden moments. We entered as strangers, soon we have friends, and they come over, and they sit with us, and they drink with us, and they talk to us. They tell about the big, terrible things they've done and the big, wonderful things they'll do. Their hopes and their regrets and their loves and their hates, all very large, because nobody ever brings anything small into a bar. And then I introduce them to Harvey, and he's bigger and grander than anything they offer me. And when they leave impressed. So Elwood P. Dowd, the speaker of this quote, is showing me what it would look like if I do my job well to remain open to the transcending mystery and wonder that other people bring, those stories that aren't told in my words. Elwood didn't just listen to their stories. He sat openly in a place where people bring their big things, comfortably hanging out with his own sense of wonder. So I like that image of how we can accept the big things that other people bring. I think what Elwood says in Chase's play about not bringing anything small into a bar holds true for our congregations as well. There's a reason that we come to a church. There's something about this that reminds us of that connection. So it wouldn't be fair of me at this point not to share what I believe, right? And I know I put it into words, and but we're going to try that again. And the main thing is my sense of wonder and mystery and my belief in what connects us does not have anything to do with a 6 foot, 3.5 inch rabbit that no one else can see. Okay, so I think that's important. When I think of God, it's not the anthropomorphic sort of decision-making, bearded, dressed. That's not what I think of for that transcending mystery. It's also not retrospective. I think that when we think about God a lot, and when I hear back from my family members who use a lot of God language, that when I hear back from them, where they tell me God is in the gaps between a thing that happened that they understand and another thing they happen that understand that happened that they understand, right? So you have these two islands. So when I had my heart attack, there was an island of the event, and then there was the island over here where I woke up, right? Didn't expect that, kind of didn't see that coming. There's an unfathomable gap that people were telling me God had his hand on you. I was skeptical because the God that would make decisions at that level about me also decided you're on the heart attack list, right? So if it's a deciding person, that to me isn't an unknowable thing that connects us all. It's one of those faces that we find that makes people feel less frightened by what caused them to want a God in the first place. So you take it way back, let's go back thousands of years. We all run into things that we don't understand. There are people that we're sitting with here that we have to wonder, how did I come to be here with them? How did this person enter my life, and why did it turn out so good? I couldn't have made a decision that good myself. So we have this mystery around us in small ways. If we go back farther, those gaps between what people understood to be true are huge, right? So three children are born, two of them die, one doesn't. Must be a reason for that. When your tribe is the one that survives, and you look back and you see these stories where it looks like somebody else should have, right? Your ancestor was the third son of a nobody. It's your story to look at and say, well, then God chose him to bring us here, right? So there were some big gaps. Those gaps got closer and narrower the more we understood about how things work. That seems to leave very little room for the mystery, right? Where's the transcendence in that? Those gaps that are closing, those are the gaps between things when we're looking backwards. The only things we understand, or even think we understand, are when we look behind us at what already happened and then make some decisions about why they happened or how. So you can say we know what's going on, the whole world is connected. We are connected in truth to yesterday's whole world. It's very rare that we are connected to even one person to know what's going on if they're not in our visible range, if they're not in our telephone range, if they're not on our telephone at the time. Where the mystery in life really was and still is today, unchanged, it's right here. It's the right now. Our arguments about where God is and about what things are important and how things fit together, that's all looking behind us. And our ability to remember them is what shapes how we think of it in the first place. So if there's a way to turn around and look at the now, that's, I think, what Unitarian Universalism is trying to bring forward. When we talk about spirit, we're talking about, and it's described in there, that we're looking at this 360-degree view of spirit, right? So it's what you do here and now. It's not for gain in the future for yourself. It's not for finding an afterlife that works for you. And it's not for use in arguments about things that have already happened. It's being present now. So when we look at how we relate, what are some of the things we share? What's our face on that balloon, right? Because if the balloon is that force, is that mystery, is that thing, that connecting, unifying business that we can't understand, and we're drawing faces on it, and arguing about how the faces look. We can move around and look at that from someone else's point of view to start to build those bridges. The tricky part about that is we're in the balloon. That's what now is. To pretend that we can take this balloon and say, well, this is God, and we've got a face here and a face there. In truth, whatever it is that the universe is, we're inside of it. So it's like cave paintings. We're inside that balloon. We're painting faces on the inside and imagining by doing that, that it's manageable enough and small enough to be outside of us. So if we're all in the balloon together, all in this thing that we can't see, but we know there's part of it, there's part of something in the universe that holds us together and helps us to wonder, that means we're standing back to back with the people that are looking at a different picture than we are. We don't really need to move. We don't need to walk around. That's an illusion. We're all in the center of this right now. Everybody who needs our help is somewhere now. And when we run into them and are able to provide help, it's still going to be now. So how we move from this completely unformed, undefinable, who knows what's going to happen future, it moves through this little spark of the present and takes form in a past that gets concretized and recorded. And then we can argue about it and we're happy. But looking at the spark of now that we're always riding in, Unitarian Universalism wants those hopes for the future, the fears for the future, the actions of the past. We want that concentrated, I think, on what's going on now? Who needs help now? How do we make that work? And I think that it's possible that the transcendent mystery and wonder, that actual feeling you get when you feel the connection, when it actually goes on for you, that could be the manifestation of doing today the work that's in front of you that needs to be done today. That's a guess. When we look back at this, we can argue about how right I was. What we can do is we can look for the arguments for love in the things that other people share with us. We can make sure that we don't rely on someone else's belief when we're talking to them in order to describe the message of love that we're trying to get out there. That's what's going to help us to move from what I experienced as my irresponsible search for truth and meaning, because I wasn't considering the effect that I had in leaning on these other people, using their history to describe my now. Looking for the love means that we're all in the moment together, and we can find some commonalities, build some bridges, and use those to fix the roads that all of the traveling souls cross. Now, if you'll rise in body or spirit for hymn number 21, For the Beauty of the Earth.
Thank you.
ahead and sit down. So we extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
We are all beautiful and imperfect people, and we have the opportunity to share this life with all of the other beautiful and imperfect people. Let's be courageous enough to reach out and hold each other and keep our strength to grow a new world. Amen and blessed be.
And please stay seated for the postlude. This is Something Better by... Thank you for coming.